Welcome to this Frequency Matters podcast. I'm Pat Hindle, and this is our third podcast in our series with Molex on 5G technologies. Today, we are exploring the challenges to deploying 5G and how we can overcome them to realize the promise of the technology. To discuss this subject with us, we have Lee Edelman, Director, Corporate Strategy and Development at Molex. Welcome, Lee.
Thanks for having me, Pat.
So let's start off with the survey of carriers conducted by Dimensional Research and sponsored by Molex that shared some of the really interesting perspectives about the speed with which 5G will begin to bring the value to our customers. In the US, that value was expected to be achieved in between 2 and 5 years. Does that sound right and why?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, Pat. You know, in that survey, 99% of respondents said they would see that value in that timeframe, 2 to 5 years. And almost half said that there would be some users who would see value within just 1 year. You know, what's interesting is that when we think about it, there's many different ways that value can be delivered. You know, maybe in the early days, it's a little bit better speed, a little bit better latency when you're out and about on your sub-6 network phone. Or maybe you get that occasional speed boost when you step into a millimeter wave coverage area in a, you know, in a dense urban intersection or in a sports arena. And, you know, these are benefits, even if they're not kind of the life-changing benefits that we think about when we talk about 5G. You know, our survey respondents meant when they talk about benefit, you know, it makes sense. We expect about 50 to 75% of mobile subscriptions in North America to be 5G by 2025. So the timeline kind of jives with that. You know, that said, the really big benefits, that the blindingly fast downloads, the millisecond latency, these new use cases for mobile data that we're only just starting to imagine, those are probably going to come a little bit later. About half our survey respondents said that millimeter wave is going to be critical to driving significant benefits for our users. And millimeter wave is going to lag a little bit behind sub-6. So I think as adoption and coverage increases, and as that ecosystem around 5G starts to build up, there'll be more and more opportunities, more and more chances for customers and consumers to really start to see the difference 5G is going to make in their lives.
So I'll have to wait a few years for my virtual reality to really kick in, huh?
Yeah.
So there are several regions around the world, such as China, Japan, and Korea, that already are reaping the rewards from the technology. How did they get there so fast and are so far ahead of some of the other countries?
Yeah, again, the survey data was pretty enlightening here. Our respondents said that about 50% of consumers in Japan and Korea were already recognizing substantial benefit from 5G. And that number was just about 7% for the United States, which again, for you know, those of us in the United States who are living through this probably is something that they can connect to. I think there's a couple of reasons for it. First of all, it comes down to geography. Japan and Korea are just much denser. They've got much more urban populations than the US. Korea is the second densest country in the world. And that increases the efficiency of the deployment of the telecom infrastructure here. You can reach a lot more people with less build out, a lot more inexpensively. Japan and Korea also view 5G as a productivity improvement to their economies. And there's a much greater coordinated push towards the high end, especially around millimeter wave, than we're seeing in the US. China's a success story for a little bit of a different reason. China's committed to 5G in a very big way. They've poured hundreds of billions of dollars of investment into it. They've come out and said that their goal is to have a quarter of all mobile subscriptions be 5G by 2025. One of the enablers there is Huawei and ZTE. Those are, of course, massive, well-coordinated, well-funded. And then also, it comes down to the technology choice. China's really shown a preference for sub-6, which is a lot cheaper and easier to deploy at scale than millimeter wave is.
So several issues from spectrum to lack of use cases and regional regulations were highlighted as the major issues to hinder the delivery for carriers. How will the array of challenges be overcome in order to drive progress?
One of the biggest challenges that carriers in our survey noted was the cost of infrastructure and network equipment, sort of really saying that needs to come down in order to scale this out further. About 40% of our survey respondents who were from the carrier side were concerned about this. You know, look, 5G is going to be really expensive. By some estimates, it's going to cost $1 trillion globally to get to some of those end states we were talking about. So that's your macro cell upgrades. That's this massive build out of outdoor small cells, leasing street furniture to put those small cells on, investment into edge computing, into new cloud technologies. all of that goes into these massive estimates of infrastructure buildup. And then, of course, you've only got a couple of key global network equipment providers like Ericsson, Nokia, Huawei, starting to be Samsung. So there's a little bit less price pressure than may be desired given the nature of that market. You talked about spectrum. You know, on the governmental side, spectrum is obviously regulated and it's a finite resource. One of Molex's experts on this topic is Roger Kaufman. And you can listen to his podcast on Frequency Matters, where he really goes into some depth here, much more than I can speak to. But there's certainly a concern about spectrum availability as well. And then finally, that lack of use cases is an interesting one, right? I asked my five-year-old son what he thought 5G was. And he had seen some commercials about it. And he said, oh, it's this thing that's gonna power your phone. And it's funny because, you know, his understanding of 5G is probably not that far off your typical American consumers. Yeah, it's this vague idea that it's going to make my phone a lot better, make it a lot more powerful, but without any idea how I'm really going to use it on a day-to-day basis, what it's really going to do for me. And that's because today there really aren't a lot of use cases that demand the capabilities that we're all promised 5G is going to bring one day.
Lack of viable use cases ranks second on the challenges list. And it's widely believed that 5G needs a killer app to get off the dime. Is that your expert opinion as well? Or are we just too fixated on killer apps and it's actually progress across the entire ecosystem that is needed to move the needle?
Yeah, I think it's fun to all think about those killer apps and those new use cases that we're only just starting now to imagine. In the consumer space, about a third of Molex's survey respondents felt, to your question, Pat, that maybe that's AR, VR, or gaming. In different end markets, maybe those transformative use cases, those killer apps are 5G connected cars or remote surgeries or smarter industrial robotics. But today it feels like we're all kind of starting to write our own sci-fi novels about it. You know, no one knows exactly when these are going to happen. No one knows exactly how they're going to start to take shape. And so what we like to do is sort of work backwards from those possible futures. You say, what do I have to believe to say that in any of those things are going to be the reality in 3, 5, 10 years from now? And as you do that, you start to realize that maybe the more important question to be asking is not exactly what and when, but how do we get there? And what are the pieces of the puzzle that really have to come together to get there? You know, to get to those futures, first you need investment in infrastructure. Then come your device makers who can take advantage of the infrastructure. And then once you've got scale in your subscriptions, now it makes sense for your application developers to start coming up with that next big thing. Then you loop back on that cycle, right? You realize, well, gosh, the applications could be just a little bit more useful if only coverage were a little better or devices were a little more powerful. So that spurs further investment and further infrastructure build out. So now you've kicked off this virtuous cycle. And within each step of this virtuous cycle, you've got this massive ecosystem of players that has to contribute to it. Your carriers, your network equipment OEMs, your device OEMs, your chipset makers, your component makers, your app developers, your cloud and your edge providers. To me, it's about keeping a close eye on this virtuous cycle. The inflection point is when you really start to see it kick into high gear. You know, I think the challenge for everyone is struggling with in 5G these days is, how do you know exactly when to invest? How do you know when to get started? And to me, the answer is, you've got to watch this cycle of innovation and investment. You'll know you're there when you start to see a quickening of pace between the development and application and hardware side. And you start to see, again, that rapid pickup of investment between each of those players.
So 5G does really represent a massive paradigm shift. And talking about the cycles that you just mentioned, how do we move from 4G to 5G? Is it a series of gradual steps or is it a big step change?
I think the first thing to remember as you know, listeners to this podcast series will know is that there's a couple different flavors of 5G. And the most important two are sub-6 and millimeter wave. So let's talk about sub-6. Once these networks get built out a little bit further than where we are today, we're going to see some pretty big improvements over 4G LTE. We'll see latencies under 10 milliseconds versus call it about 20 for 4G. We'll see practical speeds in the 250 to 1,000 megabits per second range versus call it about 100 for 4G. So we'll see some improvements from a consumer experience side, but technically it's not that big of a shift. Carriers can jumpstart 5G using some of their existing infrastructure. And on the device side, your modems and antennas and components are kind of gradual evolutions over the technology in 4G devices today. Yeah, millimeter wave is a different story entirely. It's a huge step change, and that comes down to physics. It's higher frequency, and that just makes it trickier. In mobile devices, your chipsets have to have all of the key radio frequency components on the same integrated circuit, even the antenna. On the interconnect side, tolerances on the connectors for millimeter wave need to be tuned to a T. You can hear my colleague Stephen Drinan talk more about the changes that we're having to make in our own engineering teams in one of Molex's other Frequency Matters podcasts. And again, Bill, I'll defer to his expertise there, but suffice it to say, this all requires a much more tightly integrated engineering team with new capabilities. On top of that, you know, millimeter wave has limited range. It can be blocked by the wind or rain or, you know, panes of glass. So on the infrastructure side, to get millimeter wave to more people, you need a much larger investment in infrastructure than any of the previous generations of cellular technologies. This is where small cells come in. By about 2025, about half of global small cells will be for millimeter wave. But even with that investment, you're still only going to be covering a small percentage of the population until we get closer to, you know, the end of the decade. So it's not like you'll be able to just go and connect to a millimeter wave network anywhere you want. We're only still talking about dense intersections, stadiums, and such for a couple of years now. So that helps explain why in Molex's survey, about 86% of the respondents felt that millimeter wave has a lot more potential than other parts of 5G, but also has a lot more risk.
So Molex is engaged with customers and influencers on all sides of the 5G spectrum, including infrastructure, devices, and components. So you're kind of right in the middle of supporting all the players who will drive the impacts in the space in the coming years. What advice can you give them as they look to predicting timing, investment, and focus areas for 5G engagement?
So we talked earlier about this idea that 5G is this ecosystem. You can't just listen to the carriers, the phone makers, the chipset makers, any one party. You've got to be watching that coordination between all the different players in the ecosystem. And what's exciting about our role here at Molex is that we're talking to all these guys and driving innovation in all parts of the 5G ecosystem. And we've got connectors and antennas and leading mobile phones. We've got products that can connect to industry-leading mobile chipsets. We produce connected health devices. We've got components across the spectrum of telecom infrastructure. We're a leading supplier of automotive antennas. So 5G will drive investment in cloud and edge, and we've got product in the world's largest data centers. So if you're anywhere in that ecosystem looking to gather that additional intelligence on where it's going, we've got ears to the ground and sort of what matters to 5G. So, you know, what does all this mean if you're a supplier in that 5G ecosystem? It means it's time to find a partner who can help you listen to that ecosystem, and Molex is happy to be that sounding board. The other piece of advice I'd give is that it's probably time to start going beyond just listening and to start doing. You know, our carrier survey respondents felt that half of the network infrastructure and connected device makers were falling behind their needs. And that makes sense, given the lead times all this takes. If you believe that your inflection point is 2 to 5 years out, development on a lot of these applications takes 2 years, 18 months, what have you. So development needs to start now. So again, Molex really takes pride here in its close design and development partnerships with our customers. Our R&D teams have told me that we've literally sat down and whiteboarded out complex connectors with our customers to meet their needs. So whether you're still gathering intelligence or whether you're ready to start designing, Molex is here to help.
Yeah, I have been very impressed by doing this series with Molex, how broad your portfolio of products is and how deep your reach is. So yeah. Moving on to millimeter wave, what are the applications that will make best use of millimeter wave as it becomes more immersive? Will it require AR and VR in the future? Will gaming be its killer app? And are there other implications of the technology that key players should be on the lookout for?
It's a great question. So you go down to the key technical differentiators in millimeter wave, and it comes down to two main things. Really fast downloads, call it 2 gigabits to 10 gigabits per second practical speed, and really low latency, a millisecond or less. But we also know, we talked about this earlier, that we can't expect a ton of really broad coverage. So you've got to look for applications that take advantage of that speed, but don't need a really broad geographic area. Now, so what does that mean? That the killer app for millimeter wave, it's probably not going to be handling the driving on your autonomous car. You likely won't have coverage on the highway and you'll lose connection if it rains. But AR and VR are pretty compelling, right? As an example, that could be for communication, kind of a FaceTime on steroids, or gaming we talked about a little bit. Latency is going to be a really critical factor in both of these. some level of AR enabling a new consumer marketing paradigm is also probably in the cards. I mean, we know the tech economy today revolves around personalized ads, so you can imagine a future in which that plays out in AR as well. And again, going back to that ecosystem, device innovation is going to help drive all of this. Are you going to be calling your friends on AR on your phone that you hold in your hand, on your wearable, on your AR glasses, on something else entirely we haven't thought of? All these are pretty fascinating alternatives, again, for everyone throughout that ecosystem.
Yeah, and I think it's very impressive in that area would be the remote medical surgery applications, as you'd be able to remotely operate on anyone around the world and have the best expert doing that.
Yeah, it's a really exciting possibility. Absolutely.
So 5G will drive remarkable change and innovation also on the plant floor. How will Industry 4.0 both drive its impact and support its adoption?
You know, Industry 4.0 is this really broad idea encompassing smart factories, processing systems that learn and respond in real time, even, you know, maybe in the future configure to sort of re-optimize themselves. And, you know, underlying all of that is the need for improved machine learning models and a lot more data from a lot more sensors, which all need to be connected somehow. So we're pretty optimistic about the role that 5G can play in driving that connectivity. Private 5G networks can be more secure than Wi-Fi 6, which is sort of widely viewed as the sort of the other option out there. And 5G can support improved latency and greater device density than Wi-Fi 6 as well. So one of the first use cases we see in industry is for condition monitoring. You can imagine this proliferation of sensors in factories and refineries and other process industries, where all these sensors are communicating all sorts of data that can help predict failures and reduce maintenance costs. You know, of course, I think that the key challenge in getting off the ground in industrial is going to be that wired Ethernet connections are everywhere today in industrial. Everything is wired. That's the standard. So that's where we see things like mobile robots and AR, VR coming in to sort of break through that dam. These are applications where you obviously can't be connected to a wire. So as these things start to drive investment in private 5G infrastructure in a given factory, that starts to build trust in the system and remove some of the barriers for router connectivity so that you can ultimately get to some of the other things we talked about, like condition monitoring or even process control.
So as the strategy leader for Molex, you're the guy with the crystal ball. What does the future of 5G look like, and what are the design, expertise, and innovation requirements to drive mainstream value and the adoption in this evolving space?
Yeah, I wish I had that real crystal ball. Let me know when you find it. But you know, for me, it's as we talked about, it's watching the process. You know, no one knows exactly what the future is going to hold. But what I believe is that if we take that full ecosystem view, that helps provide a lot more clarity. You know, Molex is working with players that are going to be connected across that wide range of the ecosystem. So we get to have our ears to the ground, our finger on the pulse of 5G. And as we start to think through the solutions, we get a sense for, again, where those design and innovation cycles start to quicken and respond and react in real time. To me, maybe the most important thing is that with something as broad as 5G, designers will really have to get into their heads of their customers and their consumers to innovate on their behalf. Now, take the example of automotive. I said earlier that millimeter wave probably won't be the way that you're going to control your car's autonomous driving function. But as you pull your electric vehicle into your rapid charging station on a rest stop off the highway, let's, you know, make a few more assumptions about the future while we're at it. You know, maybe that's when your millimeter wave kicks in. Maybe you upload gigs of telematics data and download a whole bunch of movies to your car's infotainment system in a minute or two while your car is charging. You know, that's a use case that's pretty specific. It's an example of how we can start to take 5G from a solution in search of a problem, often gets called that today, to a set of real solutions that customers are going to value, even when they can't imagine it yet. So again, it really comes down to listening to that innovation cycle and trying to put yourself in the mind of those consumers and innovating for them.
Well, thank you very much, Lee, for joining us today to talk about the challenges of deploying 5G and how we can overcome them. We really appreciate you giving us your view on the technology and design expertise that you have, and even a little bit in your crystal ball area. We thank everybody for joining us today. If you missed any of the previous Molex 5G podcasts, you can find them at podcast.microwavejournal.com. We thank you for listening today.